friends. Welcome back to Red Ice Radio. I hope you're doing well and that you are comfortable wherever you are. As you know, if you are a regular listener, we are coming to you from Gothenburg in Sweden. But you can, of course, find us around the globe wherever you can get internet access. Our website is redicecreations.com. This is the place to go if you want to read interesting, important news from around this world and sometimes beyond. You can listen to groundbreaking radio interviews on a myriad of topics. We add new programs twice a week and wherever we're not out on the road filming or attending conferences. And you can, of course, tune in whenever you want to through our archives. We have a free archive with over a year of good stuff for you. And we also have a members area where you can get full access to our archives going back to 2006. We have video interviews, webcast, films, and much more of that is in the pipeline as well. All the details again on how you can sign up and join us can be found on our website, redicecreations.com. Also, while you're there reading, listening, or watching some of our content, don't forget to check out our YouTube channels, one for radio and another one for video. We also have a Twitter feed now, so you can follow us from your cell phone or a mobile. All right, let's move on and focus on our program here. Our guest today is Lennon Honor. He is a researcher and filmmaker who primarily focus on subliminal programming and manipulation within the media. He has been focusing a lot on the music industry as well as television programming and, shall we call it, Disney mind control. I recently linked up on Red Ice a couple of videos, trailers rather, that is on Lennon's upcoming project called The Borg Agenda and the Sexualization of Technology. And this obviously ties in the whole technological aspect into the mind control agenda as well. And this is what we primarily are going to focus on today. The website that you can take a look at right away here is LennonHonorFilms.com. That will give you much more information about his projects and research. We will have this linked up on our end as well. Of course, you can click through easily and get to Lennon's website from ours. So with that, welcome to Red Ice Radio, Lennon. Thank you very much for coming on the program.
Yeah, it's absolutely my pleasure, Henrik, and I'm honored to be here with you today.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Lennon. It's great of you to spend some of your time with us here today, and I'm really looking forward to diving into some of these areas with you. I've been looking at a few of your projects, a few of your videos and films, and I'd like to know a little bit more about yourself before we kind of dive into the main topic here today. I know that you're a pretty good flute player, actually, and we might touch upon that a little bit later in the program. Yeah, definitely.
But definitely
tell us how you kind of get involved when you got involved in this kind of research that you're doing currently, Lennon.
Yeah, I've been doing research into certain, you know, topics I think that people would probably consider to be, I don't know if abnormal is the right word to use, but it's just a little bit outside of the box. I've been probably doing that maybe for about 6 years, but it's always been an ongoing process from birth. But it wasn't until like maybe over the last year and a half I really started to look at subliminal messages and how they manipulate human consciousness. And in terms of doing film, I've been doing it almost for about a year now. And how I got into it was real interesting because it wasn't like I had the intent of actually producing films. My wife and I, we have four children, and we don't allow our children to watch broadcast television because we try to limit the amount of conscious manipulation that takes place, especially subliminal manipulation that takes place through media. So we try to shield them from as much of it as possible. We can't shield them from all of it, but we can sure do our best as parents and as responsible parents to shield their consciousness so they can kind of grow into the being that they so chose, as opposed to being manipulated into being something that manipulators want them to be.
And
So what happened was we go to the library and we'll pick out a movie, or check out a couple of movies, and then we'll bring them home. And my wife and I, we always screen the movies prior to allowing our children to watch them. And many parents, they don't do that. They'll just allow their children to watch things without screening them. And what we found in our screening process was most of the films that we brought home that were supposed to be for children were really inappropriate for children. And a lot of it has to do with the sexualization of cartoons, subliminals, sexual references within cartoons, a lot of pedophilic content within cartoons. And my wife and I, most of the movies we bring home, we don't allow our children to watch just because of that fact alone. And there was one movie in particular, I remember it, that we picked up, and it was called Angels in the Outfield. It's a Disney film. And we thought, okay, it's Angels in the Outfield, and my son likes baseball. One of my sons, he likes baseball. So we figured, okay, this would be an excellent one for him because it sounds really, really nice. And we put the film in, and we were screening it, and within 10 minutes, we turned it off. And because my wife and I, we were like, there is absolutely no way that we're going to subject our children to this level of mind manipulation. And it was a Disney film. And after that, I talked to my wife, and I said, you know, one day I really would like to do analysis of film and music videos and music lyrics and actually, you know, produce films in that regard. And she was like, you know, you should do it. So what ended up happening was after that experience, I really got into really just in terms of analysis. I started to analyze different movies and videos. And after a while, I figured, OK, why don't I put this in video form? And I did that as well. And since that time, it's been maybe about almost a year now. And it's been a remarkable journey ever since.
Wonderful. And you know, there's so much I want to talk about that in regards to Disney and the general idea that you're trying to take that responsibility that you're talking about to kind of shield your kids from this subliminal programming. But what I want to ask you about here right away is what do you feel that is the worst in some of these films that you're screening? If we talk about Disney, for instance, is it something that you easily can see? I mean, there must be something in regards to how you become aware of this yourself. Maybe you've been reading a lot about the subject, or is it more kind of an intuitive feeling that you get when you watch it, that shit, I don't like this, what is going on? And then you sit down and analyze it. Or how do you go about that, Lennon?
Yeah, there's many factors. One is I work with this concept called reclaiming our sight. And it's what it really deals with is, some people call it the third eye. I just don't use it that reference. But the third eye concept is to be able to perceive things for what they really are, as opposed to perceiving things just at face value. Because as human beings, you know, in terms of our manifesting here, there's a lot more going on than what we've been told in terms of our experience. And there's a lot more that's what I call in plain sight that many people just cannot see. And so part of what my films do is it really puts people through a process, as I go through the process, because it's all a process of reclaiming our sight so that we can see things that before we didn't even recognize as being present. And that's one level. It's an everyday process of being diligent and just asking critical questions and really thinking critically about what we see, what we hear, what people say to us, the images that we see, the symbolism that we see, the underlying storylines within films. Just really taking a critical look and using our critical thinking skills as human beings to analyze the things that are around us. So that's one level. But in terms of reading, I don't do much reading at all. And I most of the information that I speak about in my films, it's internal, meaning that I'm aware that in terms of acquiring information, information is infinite, so therefore the methods and means of acquiring information is also infinite. And that's relevant because once we understand the infinity in terms of how we can acquire information, we realize that we don't really have to go to any external force for information. It's already inside of us. And there's a lot of other concepts when we talk about DNA and so forth that really plays a part in that. So for me, the only book that I read that really kind of put things in perspective for me in terms of subliminal manipulation was a book by Dr. Wilson Ryan Keyes. And I would highly recommend that to anyone. And I never recommend books to people, but if I could recommend one book, that would be the one. And it's titled The Age of Manipulation. And within The Age of Manipulation, he just breaks down a lot of the different levels of subliminal manipulation that's taking place on the planet, especially within media. And from viewing that or from reading that book, I really started to think more critically about the symbolism around. So there's many different things that have kind of infused into my consciousness that has allowed me to see things. But ultimately, it's a matter of sight. And every individual is, you know, it's in their best interest, and in particular, it's in their children's best interest to reclaim their sight to such a degree so that they can shield themselves and shield their children and future generations as well from the different levels of subliminal manipulation.
Absolutely. And What do you feel is one good technique of doing it? Do you think that just slowing things down and showing things several times over is a good way? Because in many cases, these kinds of things move very quickly. So you can you know, we know that on a subconscious level, we pick up things. Doesn't matter if it's upside down, mirrored, or if it's moving very fast. The unconscious mind absorbs it and soaks it up, so to speak, anyway. But by showing it more slowly, or maybe perhaps repetitive many times, you actually get a chance for the conscious mind to also pick up on it.
Yes.
Is that one of the techniques that you use?
Yes, yes. That's one of the primary techniques is slowing things down, because oftentimes the subliminal manipulation happens within a very brief moment of time. Even the symbols like the symbols that we see when we're driving along the road, and they're up on, you know, the different ads that are by the highway that you just drive past, and you really don't pay a notice of them. They pass by so quickly, and part of it is because it passes by so quickly, we don't really register it on a conscious level, but of course the subconscious picks up everything. So one of the strategies that I use, and I'm very particular about this, is to slow particular things down. And what you find in media, you know, movies, music videos, so forth, is oftentimes the subliminal is placed, in terms of the imagery, is placed within a very short time frame. And sometimes it's just a quick flash. But then when you, once you start to reclaim your sight, when the flash happens, most people don't even see it. But when you start to go through the process of reclaiming your sight, you already instinctively see, you say, wait a minute, there's something there. What was that? And people, they look at you like, what are you talking about? I didn't see anything. And then you say, well, wait a minute, let me freeze this. And you slow it down and you freeze it. And then you realize, okay, now I understand, you know, what it was that I was seeing. So that's one part. But there's also just on an intuitive level, as human beings, most of the manipulation that's going on around us, we are aware of it on some level. However, most of us, we've been indoctrinated into a system via the school system, via the relationships that we have with people, all these different constructs, be it religious institutions, all these different constructs have literally indoctrinated our vision, so that when we actually see these things and it makes us feel uncomfortable, we will reject it outright and not really deal with the underlying things. And I can just give you an example. Like my family and I, we have four children, so our family time isn't about sitting in front of a television. That's not family time. Because what that really is a group of people sitting in front of a television to be mind controlled, to be mind controlled. And how can you call that family time? But what's interesting is if in fact my family sits down and we watch a film that we've already screened, we're consciously aware of everything that's taking place. So if something comes up that doesn't seem right, we'll talk about it. Now, the difference is that there are people who they will sit and they will watch, and instead of consciously recognizing that there is something there that doesn't seem right, they'll ignore it altogether. In some cases, they can't see it, but in other cases, they can see it, but they don't want to deal with that reality. And so part of what really needs to happen, especially in terms of protecting our children's consciousness from different levels of mind control, mind manipulation, and subconscious manipulation, is we have to be courageous enough and willing enough to intellectualize what we see, and then deal with it on an intellectual level to say, no, okay, wait a minute. If in fact this doesn't make me feel right, then I need to turn this off. But unfortunately, many people, they would just go along with the program, even if it makes them feel uncomfortable, and then subject themselves and their children to mind control and mind manipulation.
Yeah. You know, one reason I think why they want to do that, or why they end up in that situation, is they consider the TV or the film or whatever to kind of be the retreat, the time to relax and to just have a good time and not think about, you know, all the stuff and all the worries in the world. And in one way, that means that you kind of let down your guard in that sense, you know what I mean? And that's when they hit you. And it's really a smart technique in one way to actually reach through people in that way. But again, as you say, it's like, it's not an excuse in one way to be lazy, because if you're not aware of this stuff that you're talking about, and what we'll go in more detail in this program here, then that is going to, in one way, affect you. And in many cases, you have to ask yourself, do I want to be affected by this, or do I not want to have this in my life? Do I not want to be affected by this? Then I have to have a conscious way of blocking this out, or in some way at least be aware of how it's trying to program me. But again, that idea that there actually are people just want to sit down, they want to relax, they don't want to deal with all this stuff. And I think that that's primarily the problem here, so to speak. But the way you go about it then is that you actually you take it from an intellectual point of view, I guess, and you try to break it down for what it actually is. Is that correct, Lennon?
Yes, and one cannot be lazy, consciously lazy, in order to do that, you know?
Yeah,
and that's,
yeah, that's
what's
right.
That's really powerful about the television is in terms of just in terms of how people engage it, it's actually a submissive act because you basically hand your consciousness over to the television. And in a deeper sense, the television really functions in modern society as the God being.
Yeah,
really, it does. Now, I'm not talking about the creator because there's a difference between gods and creator. I'm talking about the construct of the God and within religious institutions. The television really plays a much more major role in terms of manipulating human consciousness than any other institution on planet Earth. That includes religion, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Part of what happens within religious institutions is people have to submit themselves to certain kinds of dogma, certain kinds of ritualistic practices, certain kinds of ideologies about our relationship to the God beings and indeed our relationship to the creator. The television does exactly the same thing. People, you literally have to submit your consciousness. And that's why when people sit in front of the television, if you look at their face, they don't even appear to be present anymore. They are hypnotized.
Right.
They're literally hypnotized and they are no longer functioning as a sentient being. They are literally accepting the programming. So you can, and part of it has to do with the laziness, but you have to submit your consciousness and you cannot think critically about what you see, what you hear, what you feel. If in fact you are being lazy and you have already submitted yourself to the agenda, and really the agenda of the television is to program human consciousness. And I should say that all agendas on planet Earth, from my research and understanding of things, and as limited as it may be, I've come to realize that all agendas, whether it's a New World Order agenda, whether it's the Borg agenda, whether it's the feminization of men agenda or the sexualization of technology, all agendas really come down to the manipulation of human consciousness. And so therefore, anything that manipulates human consciousness is a powerful tool and it can be used for good. It can be used for harm. Television, however, has always been used to harm human consciousness, to program people to live out lives that are not in line with what they chose prior to manifesting here. And that is to say that prior to even coming to this realm, we already have established in our own consciousness on a soul level why we chose to manifest here and the experiences that we have. But we have constructs such as television, which really reprogram us to function on levels that we didn't intend to in the first place. And so that's why television is such a powerful tool in terms of manipulating human consciousness. And it holds profound, it has a profound impact on not only the individual's consciousness and on a soul level, but also the consciousness of all of humanity on planet Earth.
That is really interesting. I want to definitely talk more about this, the soul level later on in the program as we've go deeper into this. But one thing I want to ask you about, or check rather, if you kind of have looked into this or not, is this idea about the particular frequency from the TV as well, the kind of hypnotic nature, as you mentioned, of the television technology. It's producing, I think it is a theta wave, basically. It's called entrainment, and our brain actually starts to kind of mimic the frequency of the TV, which means that we basically end up in a kind of dream state. Have you looked into this at all?
Yes, this is true. And this is part of one of the reasons why television is such a hypnotizing effect on human consciousness. And one of the things I talked about, this was like months ago, and this gets into one of the films that I produce. It's called The Creator Series. One of the most egregious lies that we've been told about who and what we are as human beings. We've been told that we are these three-dimensional beings that just come to this planet for a couple of years, and we may do a few things, but then after that, it's time to split, and we may go to a good place after that, and we may go to a bad place, but that's pretty much it. That's life, you know?
Yeah.
And what's really... In terms of what and who and what we are as human beings, it's important that we begin to look at ourselves in a different light. And that is to say that we are much more profound than that. We are much more powerful than that. Our ability to create, consciously is profound. We can create all sorts of things. My wife and I, we created children. And in that creative act, there is a certain level of power that is associated with that. We just created two human beings. That's powerful. So one of the things that has happened, and television plays a major role, is just in terms of how we perceive ourselves as human beings has been so degraded that we will submit ourselves to all other forms of of programming, which dictates to us who and what we are. Because ultimately, if we see ourselves as less than everything else in the universe, then we submit, we basically submit our consciousness to other forces, which will then dictate to us who and what we are. So getting back to television, one of the things that has happened through television is that when we look at the television screen, and this isn't just even, this on one hand is talking about the frequency level, but just as at the television screen period, when we look at it, it's really just a flat screen. And if, in fact, we see a flat screen as reality, then we can only perceive, as a result, we are training our mind to see something that is flat as having three dimensions. Because when we look at the television, it looks like it's three dimensional. It looks like there's back, you know, background, foreground, and left and right, up and down. So we think that. But if we continue to watch television, we are basically training our eye. This, again, gets back to the concept of reclaiming our sight. It's training our vision to perceive something that is flat as being real. Now, what happens is over time, and this is part of the reason why television is so powerful, is that people who continue to train their eye in that way, when they actually see reality around them, they don't see it as three-dimensional anymore. Everything becomes one-dimensional. And ultimately, as human beings, and this gets back to the Creator series, as human beings, the more in tune we are to the multidimensional level of reality, the more options we have at impacting our reality. Now, if in fact we can only have, if we only perceive reality within one dimension or even two dimensions, which television really programs the eye to do, then therefore we will be limited to operating within a one-dimensional or two-dimensional level. And that's very limited, right? However, if in fact we understand as human beings we are multidimensional, then we realize that we have much more power and much more say in terms of how we choose to manifest, you know, in this world, what type of reality we want to manifest on this planet. So one of the things that has happened with television is that there's this concept that people talk about the dumbing down of society. Yes, that is part of it. But also there is a dumbing down of your vision to be able to perceive reality for what it is. If, in fact, you can only see things one dimensionally, the only way that you can operate is on a reactive basis. And when we are in a reaction mode, that is not a creative mode. The more dimensional awareness we have as human beings, the more creative we can be. And whenever there are whenever we come across institutions or programs that limit our ability to perceive on a multidimensional level, we have to recognize that that is in fact a form of manipulation, and we have to shield ourselves from that.
Absolutely, we are definitely being limited in regards to sight, even language. In many cases, we are even our thoughts in that sense are being limited with all the political correctness and whatnot. But also, I want to ask you a little bit about things, let's say, hidden in the background, for instance. We talked about this idea of slowing down and really looking at something that is in a central view of, let's say, a television series or a film or what have you. But how about things that are hidden in the background? Is that also something that you pay attention to when you screen one of these films, for instance, before you show it to one of your children, that you feel that it's also important to see what goes on around the main event, so to speak, in the film?
Yes. And it reminds me of someone who has tunnel vision. Because you have tunnel vision, you can only see, you know, you may be looking at something that is massive, but if you only have tunnel vision, you can only focus in on one particular thing. And by doing that, you miss out on the massiveness of what you're really seeing. So that type of orientation in terms of vision, the people who actually put these programs, because that's what they really are, these programs, that create these programs to manipulate human consciousness, they understand that most human beings don't perceive the full breadth of what they are taking in. Literally their vision has been impaired to where they can only perceive certain aspects of what's presented to them. And one of the things, and one of the manifestations of that in terms of how we're being manipulated, is oftentimes you find that there is more information that is relevant to the dialogue inside of a film. There's more information in the background than there is with the actual character who's speaking the words. And that is to say that we shouldn't just focus on the character who's speaking. We should also be looking at the full breadth of what all the information that's presented in that scene. And oftentimes what we find is that what is in the background has significance in terms of what's really being transmitted on a subliminal level.
Absolutely. And, when we talk about, there's a difference also between films and certain series. For instance, it's all dependent on how much money goes into when they produce a film compared to a regular television series. But with having said that, do you think that all of this kind of manipulation is consciously put into these films, or is it a possibility that there are things that are put in one sense that are either there because the creators think that it's funny, and they in that regard don't really know what they're doing, and that could actually imply that they themselves in some way are manipulated and they're just carrying on this manipulative agenda, if you know what I mean. But do you think it's do you separate that at all, or do you think it's all the same and it's all consciously put in there? What's your take on that?
Yeah, now that's an important point. And I the way I perceive it is that there are, in fact, people who participate in subliminal manipulation of human consciousness, but are unconscious as to what they are doing, meaning that they themselves are running a program, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it reminds me of the movie Matrix. Like everyone, you know, most people who've seen that movie, and it's, you know, a very popular movie, they perceive Neo to be this Christ-like figure who saves humanity in a sense. And what I think about is that ultimately, how did Neo come into his Christ state, if I can call it that, or his hero ship? How did he come into that? And when you really look at the film, you realize that he came into his understanding of who and what he was through programming. He sat in a chair, and they gave him images and information into his conscious mind that literally put him on course to become what he was. So ultimately, he ran a program to become the One. He didn't evolve into the One through his own spiritual evolution. He evolved into the One through manipulation of his consciousness via technology. And I'll talk about this in my upcoming film, that ultimately the technological, it's almost like the techno-religio ideology, to where within that film, it's through technology that he comes into his hero ship. And so this goes back to, you know, the concept that we were talking about before, that there are people who may even think that they're doing good in their heroship, but they're really just running a program that was but now, however, I should also state that does not absolve the individuals who consciously wish to manipulate human consciousness in certain ways, and they consciously put in what, you know, embedded images, embedded terminology, subliminal terminology. And a lot of times what we find is that even the dialogue, if you listen to the dialogue without watching the video footage of any particular film, you will get a general idea about what they're talking about. However, when you look at the actual video footage and cross-reference that to the dialogue, you realize that there's a deeper story that's being told. And inside my next film, I use a Star Trek franchise as an example of how those types of things are done. Because ultimately, when you look at everything as a whole, again, this concept that if you perceive things multidimensionally, then you will begin to pick up the different levels of subliminal manipulation. And then you realize that a lot of it, and probably most of it, cannot just have happened by accident. That they literally had an agenda to put these things in, because it's done in such a masterful way. That's the thing. Oftentimes, that which is whenever there's intent behind something, oftentimes the way in which that whatever it is manifests, you realize that there is a certain kind of mastery that goes along with it. Now, if something just is kind of thrown in the background and it doesn't really fit, and then you analyze and you say, okay, there's a subliminal, well, that's one thing. But when you realize that how deep it is in terms of as a scientific practice, they have this down to a science. And when you realize the science and you recognize what the science is and how they literally put these different kinds of levels of mind control, mind manipulation, subliminal message inside films and videos, you realize that this cannot be by accident. This is by design with a certain intent. And that intent always goes back to the manipulation of human consciousness.
If we talk about your recent project a little bit more than the Borg agenda, what do you think is the main agenda right now, if we talk about this in the terms of technology? Where are we going, and what are they trying to do in regards to, I guess, kind of launch this into our world at this particular time? We see a lot of this, just as you pointed out in regards to the Matrix, that it's a kind of we're getting desensitized to technology. It's in one way being kind of brought into our lives, and we should become more accustomed to it. How do you view this, and what do you think is the main agenda in regards to technology, Lennon?
Yeah, now, in this next film, I make it clear that technology, traditionally speaking, in terms of the evolution of human beings on the planet, is mainly functioned to assist us as in our creative efforts. Meaning, and I can give you an example, just like I know, you know, as a musician, I'm sure you can relate to this, that the flute, when I pick up the flute, I am picking up a piece of technology, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. You know, that's fine, right? And then through my own devices and through my own skill set and through my own understandings of certain principles, I can then use that technology to create something that may or may not have profound impact on human consciousness. And ultimately, my goal is to have a positive effect on human consciousness. So that's one aspect in terms of using technology in order to actualize a level of creativity as a human being. Now, the difference is that what we're finding in the current dominant culture on planet Earth is an overdependency on technology, to where our dependence on technology has gotten to the point to where our ability to create has been diminished, that no longer can we hold the technology in our hand and be a master of it. Now it has gotten to the point where technology holds us in its hand and it has a mastery of us. Yeah. So part of what's happening is, in terms of you know, the dominant cultural norms that's being established right now, and the creation of a certain kind of culture, and it gets into this concept of transhumanism, is the purposeful and meaningful and really egregious manipulation of human consciousness to where human beings will perceive technology as equal to humanity. Now, this holds profound repercussions in terms of how we deal with each other on an everyday basis. Now, I talk more about this, and I give examples and proofs of this in my upcoming film, The Borg Agenda, 7 of 9, and the Sexualization of Technology. But in terms of why this is being done, there's many different reasons as to why this agenda is being pushed so strongly in terms of, you know, onto the mind and consciousness of humanity. But one of the major reasons, this is something that people really have to think about, and this gets into concepts about how we relate to each other as human beings, who and what we are as human beings, how we relate to our family structures, how we relate to our own children, how we relate to our grandchildren, and so forth. One of the major reasonings behind this agenda is, and now this is what I mean by when I analyze things, there's a psychology that goes along with analysis. Not only do I analyze what I'm seeing, but I also get into the mind of the people who put these types of programmings together to understand what was their intent when they did this. Now, the Borg agenda or the transhumanist agenda or the robo agenda, the ideology behind it and the psychology of it is really deep. And I'll just give a brief example of it just to kind of give an overview. And I'll explain more of this inside the actual film. Mm-hmm. If in fact you can get a human being to perceive an inanimate object, meaning technology, if you can get a human being to perceive an inanimate object as being on the same level of the human being, then if you flip that over, and this is what I mean by the psychology, you can perceive a human being as being an inanimate object. This is the psychology of transhumanism. It is not about the improvement of the human species. It's about the manipulation of human consciousness to where human beings no longer perceive themselves for what they really are. And already how we perceive ourselves is degraded. So if in fact, Hendrik, I saw you as nothing more than a piece of technology or as an inanimate object, then therefore I can subject you to a certain amount of disrespect in terms of you being a spiritual being. I can say to you whatever I want without, you know, thinking of you as a human being. That holds a profound repercussions in terms of the evolution of human consciousness and the evolution of the human spirit on planet Earth. Let me give you an example of how this is relevant. Now, you and I, we've never talked before. Like, we've never had a conversation. However, there's a kinship when we interact with each other. There is a certain level of respect and common courtesy and decency. I recognize that you are a soul that has manifested here and that your soul is part of my soul, that I too have manifested here. And so I give to you the same level of respect as a manifestation of a human being that I would want for myself. Yeah. Now, Hendrik, if in fact I have been manipulated, my consciousness has been manipulated through transhumanism, through these concepts of the Borg agenda, and I then see you as an inanimate object, then I will no longer feel obligated on a soul level to provide you with the common decency that you deserve as a soul manifested here as a human being. That's what I mean in terms of what's really taking place with what I call the Borg agenda. Now, the sexualization of technology is one of the primary thrusts of the Borg agenda, because what has happened over time is most products and services, most ideologies are sold to people through the sexualization of whatever is being sold. So therefore, if you can sexualize technology and then you sexualize the perception of human beings being nothing more than inanimate objects, then you can begin to manipulate people to accepting the transhumanist movement as being something that's beneficial to them or something that is sexually desirable to them. So the psychology of what we're dealing with is very much complex. And in the film, I really use the Star Trek franchise, the different Star Trek series, as to provide evidence and proof of how this level of manipulation in terms of human beings seeing themselves no longer as soul beings that are multidimensional and have profound power and influence upon reality, to no longer see us for what we are, but instead see us each other as nothing more than inanimate objects deserving of disrespect.
Very interesting. And again, what I've seen so far from the Borg agenda is that you touch upon this very interesting idea that the leader of the Borg, if we can call her that, is like the queen almost. Obviously, we have this idea of the hive and the interconnectedness, so to speak, that will potentially happen if we indeed come up to the technological level where we actually be able to wire our brains together in some way. They're talking about this now. They call it the worldwide mind. There's different terminology for this, but basically it's, I think their wet dream in this scenario is everyone hooked up to the internet pretty much with a kind of almost a telepathical type of ability, but it's handled through technology, potentially with some kind of microchip or some kind of implant in your brain or whatnot. But what's your take on all that, Lennon? Where do you see that they want to take this, so to speak?
Yeah, now that is what you're speaking about, some very important concepts. And one of the things is the hive mind. The dominant cultural ideology on planet Earth is nothing more than the Borg cultural construct. And that means that the hive mind, as it relates to the Borg, as the species, so-called species called the Borg, that is the same thing that is actually taking place on planet Earth when we talk about, present-day human beings. So the hive mind is an aspect of mind control, because if you could have everyone linked, as it were, to one thought, one mind, one ideology, you therefore have control. And really, if you can get people to think on that one dimension, that the hive mind is the only way to perceive reality, then you therefore have enslaved the whole human, the totality of human consciousness. So
yeah, that's right.
It's interesting because when you said how people they've been talking about like wiring brains together and as a means to acquire telepathy, it's interesting because human beings were already naturally telepathic. See, it's interesting because we've been told that we're not something, and then we are told that we should aspire to have the same things that we actually already possess as human beings. We're already naturally telepathic. So what happens is, if you tell someone that they don't have a skill, and then you present to them that skill and say, "Hey, look, I have a skill that would really benefit you," and then they accept it, you have a certain kind of power over them. So instead of getting people to understand their true power, their internal power as human beings, what has been done is we have again been placed into a position where we are being constantly bombarded with programming that tells us you need something external of you to make you better, whether it's religion, technology, this idea that we have to wire our brains together. Wait a minute, what is that about? That is about external forces dictating to us who and what we are. And if, in fact, we already have the power of telepathy, then therefore we don't need the technology in the first place. So that's one level. But the other thing is also this. I just want to speak on, because you talk about the hive mind and how there's a Borg, a Borg queen. The thing that people fail to realize is that the Borg queen, in terms of her archetype, she represents a lot of different things. But one of the things that she represents is the dominatrix figure, the sexual dominatrix. And I break this down inside the film, how her interactions with the character Data, which is a cyborg, her interactions with him revolves around the dominatrix figure over this android. And when you see it inside the film, you see how I break this down, because what happens is, even the Borg queen is sexualized as the dominatrix archetype, to where people have a sexual response to her as a sort of pseudo human being, even though she's a Borg. So if, in fact, she represents technology and she has been humanized through this archetype of the dominatrix, and then people respond to her as a sex symbol, therefore you have the people that respond in that way, they have been manipulated on a conscious and psychosexual level to accept this representation of technology as being something that's desirable. And this gets back to the title of the film, The Borg Agenda 7 of 9, and the sexualization of technology.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. And it feels to be that they play on that, just as you say, in order to make people almost like a want that they have a need or a drive to actually submit in some way to this technology, that it's going to be pleasurable, if you put it that way.
Yes,
but,
yes.
You know, which is very interesting. And again, this can be seen in many other films as well. You know, I've been having this thought in the back of my head as I'm watching a lot of the new films that are coming out in regards to AI systems and whatnot. I think even in iRobot, the recent Isaac Asimov rendition of that film, they have an AI system which is female, which is very common as well. Actually, if you look at a lot of sci-fi, it's always
yes.
a female kind of artificial intelligence system which has this almost sexual voice, you know, pleasurable sexual feminine voice. You know, do you think
yes.
that's part of this idea as well, that this is what they probably will develop if we ever get this far in regards to technology? I think that this is the way they're going to go. I think even some of our GPS system almost have this kind of voice now. I don't know if you heard that or not, but it's just
yes.
it's ridiculous to me. But this seems to be what they're playing on, right, Lennon?
Yes, yes, and part of it, because in terms of the psychology, what has been done over time in terms of human consciousness is we have been so indoctrinated to accepting the sexualization of an object as being the reasoning behind we purchase something, or the reasoning behind why we like something, or why we appreciate something, or why we feel that something is valuable, to see it as having a sexual relevance. That is part of the psychology, and we've been trained to do that. That's not something that's innate in us as human beings. Over time, we have been trained. That's why, you know, it's interesting because beer doesn't taste good. Now, I should tell, like, I've never drunk alcohol, but when I was a child, you know, my dad, one time, you know, he was drinking a beer, and I said, "Hey, Dad, I want to taste it," and he said, "You sure?" I said, "Yeah." So he put a little bit on the tip. He said, "Go ahead and taste it." And I tasted it, and it tasted horrible, right? So not only does it taste horrible, but it's in terms of how it affects human consciousness and how it affects the human body, it's very detrimental. So how then can you sell something that is distasteful to someone, something that is damaging to someone? How can you sell that to them to where they actually perceive it as being something that's valuable and really worthwhile of paying for and consuming? Well, what has happened over time is if you can sexualize it, then you can tap into a level of consciousness within every single human being as creative beings, and using sex as a means of creation, you can tap into that and use that against them. It's a form of psychosexualization of an object. And so what has happened is over time we have really come into... It's almost like a program within what we call the matrix that really dictates to us that how we perceive something as being valuable or worthwhile is that it has to have a certain kind of sexual attraction to us. So what has happened is that technology has been so sexualized, and one of the ways it has been done is through the feminization of certain kinds of aspects of technology. So therefore, if you can feminize technology and make it appealing on a sexual level, because see, this may be getting a little bit off topic, but most men, when we see a woman, we perceive them on a certain kind of level that's different than how women perceive men. Meaning that when I, you know, for instance, when I was single, when I would perceive a woman, I would literally with my eyes, I would take in her image of what she appeared to be as a woman. Now, women, on the other hand, I'm talking about traditionally speaking, they don't, in my experience, they don't perceive men on that same kind of level. What they really pick up on is a sort of spiritual dimension as to what they are seeing. They don't look at face value first. They look more at the deeper, intricate aspects of what they are perceiving with their eyes. And because of that, it's more difficult to manipulate the consciousness sexually of women than it is for men. Now, a lot of this has to do with this in terms of our physiology and what we do, you know, in terms of our sexual interaction. So I don't mean to get too much off topic, but I want to relate this to why the sexualization of technology at the forefront deals with the manipulation of what I call the manhood archetype's consciousness. That much of the sexualization of technology has been feminized because the appeal wants to be directed and has consciously been directed at the male archetype more so than the female archetype. That in and of itself is a powerful reality that really has to be addressed. I don't really get into that so much inside my next film, but it is an important aspect of what we're dealing with.
It's a very important point, and I'm glad you brought it up, because again, I wanted to kind of ask you if you think that, I at least think that this is a reflection of the fact that this technology also is a component of men. It's developed by the male brain, so to speak, and which means that it's also being sold to the male brain in that sense. And it feels to me that we can also see that technology in most cases are being differently handled and utilized by men. It seems to generally, if we generalize a little bit here, it feels to me that females are a little bit more uncomfortable with certain technologies, while men are more comfortable with it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree. And you can even look at just society as a whole. Most people who are walking around with certain kinds of technology. It's interesting because I remember one time I happened to be at a golf course, and it was for a conference, but it was at a golf course. And you see all these males walking around, and it was guys that literally had these robotic golf carts. Not golf carts, but like their bag, their golf bag. I'm not sure what they call it, but I always wanted to play golf, but I never was able, never got an opportunity. But where they put their golf clubs into the bags, it was a robot that you put the golf, and then you push a button, and if you want a certain club, you push a certain button, and then the robot will pull out the club and pick it up, right? So I just think in terms of, and you see this over and over again in terms of in society in general, the over dependency by the masculine principle on technology to a greater degree than what we find by the feminine principle. And part of it is, and this really upsets people when I speak in these terms, but as a father, as a man, and as someone who has been in a relationship with my wife for a decade now and have observed how she has interacted, and through observing her, recognizing the same types of principles in other women, I have realized that in terms of having deeper spiritual connections to who and what we are, women have a greater understanding and have a greater power in terms of keeping those types of constructs in place, in terms of who and what we are as human beings. Part of it has to do with their innate ability to create within themselves life through their womb. It's an internal process. They have it already within them, so therefore they don't need technology to be used for them to create something profound. So men having a deficiency. Now, I'm not saying that men are, I'm a man myself. I'm not saying that we are less than or anything. I'm just recognizing certain aspects of how we chose to manifest here. That, in fact, men, we have a deficiency, a natural deficiency in terms of being able to hold life within us and manifest life within us and bring forth life through us. I'm talking about human life. We have a deficiency. So, therefore, what has happened is technology has been subliminally projected into our consciousness as a means to experience the same level of creativity, supposedly, that women already have innately. And that psychology has been used against us to a great degree.
Okay, let's see here then. Speaking of technology then, Lennon, we just got cut off here and one of our computers froze up. But you were just talking about a very important point there, actually. We were talking about this idea because I wanted to ask you about the potential jealousy of the creator aspect, so to speak. It feels to me that men are in some way a little bit jealous, that they don't really understand this idea of creating a life. It's a mystery. It's something that is unknown to the male mentality in a way. And to kind of make up for that in a way, it seems that to me that we've kind of tried to create technology as a means of creating something of our own. What do you think? Is that what's going on here? And is that, again, to reiterate, is that why a lot of males are attracted to technology as opposed to women, do you think?
Yeah, and that is part of it. One of the things I just thought about while you were speaking was when we talk about technology, it's really like an external creation. So when women create life, it's an internal process in terms of what's taking place within their bodies. And I would even go so far as to say, and just within my own experience, and again, we're talking in generalization, so I'm not saying this about all men, and this includes myself, because I even criticize myself on some levels in terms of how I interact with my wife, that part of the reason why we see a sort of domination of men over women in many different aspects of our interactions, socially, politically, spiritually, it's always this dominance, like this idea, like I've seen it time and time again, where men will say things like, women don't have the right to be a head of a church. They don't have a right to steer people in terms of their spiritual evolution. Mm-hmm. And part of that there's a direct relationship to that level of domination. And it goes back to this level of imbalance in terms of men having a subconscious awareness that they are in some on some levels deficient in relationship to women. So as instead of embracing the qualities that women have to create life and protecting it as a man, what we see is the opposite, that there is a level of disrespect projected towards women. And as a result, we see the different levels of interactions between men and women are structured in a certain kind of way to where men dominate women. And it all goes back to, I personally believe that it goes back to this need for us to have that same, or this yearning for us to have the same creative ability as women. But what's deep about it is when you are in a state of balance with your female counterpart as a man, you don't see her as her creativity as anything outside of you, because you recognize that you are one. You are, and you have both manifested here, and you are both creating together. Therefore, your job is not to see her as something as external and see her creative power as being something external. What you see her as is an extension of you. So therefore, as a man, your role becomes to protect her ability to create. And by protecting her ability to create, you actually come into her same level of creativity, because you have therefore embraced her and you seek to protect her gift to create on that level. So part of the reason why there is an overdependency on technology and within the scope of manhood is because many of us have not evolved our consciousness and on the spiritual level to recognize women as being part of us. In fact, there is an agenda to manipulate consciousness to where men perceive women as something to dominate, and women see men as predators, something to be fearful of. And as long as that type of ideology and construct is placed into the minds of human consciousness, our interactions as human as males and females will get disjointed from what it was intended to be, meaning that we were supposed to function as two individuals who come together in a creative process to create and manifest things on this planet, and to ultimately to create a reality on this planet that is much more beneficial to the evolution of human consciousness as a whole.
Very interesting, Leonard. I want to pretty much carry on our conversation straight away from here in our member section. Now, there's so much more I want to talk about in regards to also the aspect of feminization of men. I want to ask you a little bit about if there's actually something interesting from a kind of philosophical point of view that we can ask in regards to what we can learn from technology. What's the point of it all? And then so much more, of course. I'm going to talk about the music industry a little bit, about Disney, your creator series, and much, much more. But before we round things off here, Lennon, for the first hour, I want to ask you a little bit about when your film is going to be available and where people can go to find out more about this, your website and so forth. Tell us about this.
Yes. Now, the Borg Agenda, the sexualization of technology. Oh, Borg. I'm sorry. The Borg Agenda, 7 of 9, in the sexualization of technology. I'm probably about 6 hours into it, and it's probably going to be closer to 7 hours in length. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to break it up into 3 or 4 2-hour segments, or 3 2-hour segments, and then maybe one last segment that's about maybe an hour long. And all of my films are viewable for free on my website, www.lennonhonorfilms, LennonHonorFilms.com, and you can view all of my films for free there. I plan on having part one uploaded next month, the 28th of next month. I believe it's on a Friday. So, people, if you can just, kind of check back to my website, it may premiere a little bit sooner than that. It may premiere a little bit later than that, but it'll be around that time. But still, I have plenty of other films there on my website for people to check out, and I invite everyone to come on over and check out the website. Also, there's a donation button there. Donations can really help, because since I don't charge for my films, I just really rely on donations to kind of help me bridge the gap. And, I have a family to support. So anything that anyone can do in terms of providing donations, I would greatly appreciate it.
And people can order DVDs as well, isn't that right, from your website?
Yeah, now this is something that I've been planning on doing. However, I've gotten some, just in terms of from people that I trust in terms of in their understanding of copyright law. So I'm still dealing with that issue, and it may be that I won't be able to get people DVDs on that same level. I may have to set it up to where people, they can just download it from my website for free, but I'm still working with that. So I haven't gotten to the point where I'm actually selling DVDs yet. I thought about doing it, but there's copyright issues that I have to consider. So in that sense, I'm not sure if I will be going the route that I had initially thought, but ultimately everyone will have access to my film, so people shouldn't worry about that.
Okay, wonderful. Again, the website is LennonHonorFilms.com. Head on over there, check it out. And again, the Borg Agenda will be out here fairly soon then. But Okay, we're going to take a break here. We have much more to discuss in our member section. So thank you very much for this first segment, Lennon. Stay with us, and we'll be right back after this break. All right, we are gearing up for hour two with Lennon Honor. We are going to talk more about the human family as opposed to the more insect-like hive mentality. We'll talk about gender roles, feminization of the male, how media, fashion, and the hero archetype are disrupting the natural roles as well. We'll talk more about the sacred feminine, if there anything we can learn from technology. We'll talk more about the idea that there are specific tasks we are have been chosen to perform before coming to this planet, and how do we remember what that is, what our purpose is. We'll discuss the manipulative forces and the non-human entities controlling events on this planet. We'll round things up to talk about children, the futurist's wet dream, the global agenda of oneness, and how we can reactivate our telepathic abilities. So don't miss our hour two with Lennon Honor for Red Ice members. And if you're not yet a member, go to our website, redicecreations.com, click on subscribe to sign up and tune in. Upcoming guests on the program, we have Alfred Weber from exopolitics.com, David Icke will talk about the Lisbon Treaty and the swine flu debacle. We'll also have Freeman back with us on the show to talk about his latest research on Obama, space war, cloning, and the sorceress of Atlantis. Also, of course, don't miss our lecture that we recorded with Freeman when we were over in London. It's available right now in our members area.